Hey everybody, this is The Trout, aka Rick Troutman. Welcome to The Trout Show Podcast. You know what I do? I interview musicians that are located all over this wonderful planet of ours that are very talented. Some of them you'll know, and some of them you may not know, but one thing I will tell you, you'll know about their life in the music industry. So sit back, grab a cup of coffee or your favorite Edo beverage, and listen to our next episode coming up right now.
Next thing you know, we were toe-to-toe. I was teaching her to two-step on the floor to George Strait, and it was going great. Call it supernatural fate. I felt her body melting to mine. I knew my spell was working just fine. Then I whispered, girl, it's time for redneck magic. Let's go for a ride. Hop on board my John Deere Classic to the countryside. You don't need them high heels shoes.
You don't need them high heels
shoes. What this boy's got planned for you.
You can have it, redneck magic.
Hey everybody, this is The Trout, and welcome to another episode of The Trout Show Podcast. Today we talked to that gentleman that just did that song you heard, which was called Redneck Magic. The artist is Robert Abernathy, and his story is very interesting because he gave up after 25 years of being a middle school teacher in Alabama. He decided to take his family, move to Nashville, and seek a career in country music. And guess what he's doing? He's doing that, and he's doing it very well. This is a brand new song he just had out, Redneck Magic. So sit back, you know what it is, get your favorite adult beverage or a cup of coffee, and enjoy this episode with Robert Abernathy next on The Trout Show. Ask you is who's the bartender in the video?
That is Smoke.
Who?
Smoke. That's oh. Smoke. That was Smoke.
Okay. Yeah. Because I was like, my wife goes, "Who's the guy?" And I go, "I'm the bartender."
Yeah. No. Smoke. A lot of people recognize him because when he was really doing well with Warner Records, he was a little bit larger, and he had a heart attack at the age of 39.
Ooh.
And he had a triple or quadruple bypass
at that age. Wow.
Yeah. And they basically told him, look, you gotta change your lifestyle. And so he did. You can find him on YouTube with his health videos and stuff. I mean, he's lost hundreds of pounds, and even influenced me to change some of my own health choices, lifestyle choices. And he looks a lot different for sure. A lot of people don't recognize him now. So,
well, was it your idea? And we're talking about the song Redneck Magic. Was it your idea to put the rap thing in there? Did you already have that discussion and then say, hey, I think it'd be good if he did that, throw that in there?
Yeah. So when I was in the studio, my producer and he is the same producer, Josh Bright. And when I was in the studio, we'd finish the song. We had a solo there, a guitar solo. And the guitar solo had that funky little.
That riff in it.
Yeah. So the solo, we had that in there. Because I wanted to make sure that people kind of caught that.
Yeah.
But I also told him, I said, but what I'd really like to do is I'd love to have a feature on this song. And I was looking, we were looking and possibly a rap feature, which I'd never done before, but I thought it would be kind of cool to cross over because the song was not your traditional country song.
No.
So we were looking for a feature, and he calls me, a couple weeks later, and maybe not even that long. He says, "Hey, listen, I've got Big Smo in here in the studio today, and I played him your song, and he wants to be on it." And so I said, "Okay," and I'd heard of him before,
right?
But I got on YouTube and just kind of hunted him down and saw, the guy had, some of his older videos, like 37 million views. which was way more than anything I'd ever had, you know.
Kind of changed your attitude a little bit.
So, but the bonus was that Smo was a, you know, his genre was basically country rap.
Right.
And all of his stuff that he has in his audience fit perfect with, like, even the title of the song, Redneck Magic, which was better than the alternative, you know, that I was going to have to hunt down to kind of put in there. I'm not a hip hop guy. I'm straight, no. Just straight up country as I get.
Yeah.
But that fit, and it fit his audience.
It fits perfectly. Yeah, I mean, I'm going along listening to the song. I'm going, okay, I'm waiting for something to happen. And this guy goes over, hey, wait a minute, this is the bartender he's talking to. All of a sudden, he's doing a rap. And I'm going like, well, I think the thing is, you know this, you're an artist. It crosses over.
Yeah.
So I always think it's kind of cool if you're clever enough. And that was just luck. Yeah. I mean, the fact that he was in the studio and your producer goes, hey.
I know. It couldn't have been any more perfect. Because, you know, like you said, I mean, it definitely connects a different audience. And so because of that, you know, we were able to get the song out in time. And he and I become friends. Yeah. I just drove out to his house and we finished writing the lyrics, and he cut it from his house, sent it to Josh. Josh pieced it together and sent it to me. I was like, man, this is different. this is different. And, you know, in writing songs, you have to be, You have two choices. You can either follow the cookie cutter method,
yeah,
that's out there, you know, whether it be Texas country, whether it be Nashville country, whether right. it be, you know, you have a, there's kind of a formula, right? And, or you can do kind of what I do. And that's, I try not to follow everything that you hear. I try to put pieces of a little bit of everything into my songs. You know, I've got a library full of them, and none of them really sound identical to each other. And I do that on purpose. You know, there's a wide range of genres. I cut one yesterday in the studio. I sent it to my producer and I said, look, whatever you do, this is funk. And I've never done a funk song, but when I wrote it, I'm sitting here in my ears, like, this is like, you know, Bruno Mars, Prince. I can hear the horns in the background, and he's looking at me puzzled, you know, and like, okay. I said, but can we invent funk country, throw an element of country in there just to kind of make sure it appeals? And so it worked. I mean, it actually worked. I got done with the first part of it yesterday and in Nashville in the session. And you know, these studio musicians, I mean, these are the same guys that record for, you know, they've done projects with Luke Combs, you know, I mean, guys. And so they know when I come in, I think by now that, okay, this is not going to be, we've got Robert on the docket today. This is not going to be like your typical Jason.
Well, it's probably fun for them. I'm sure it's fun for them.
Yeah.
Let me ask you this. Yeah. So do you sit at home, do you have your own DAW and just kind of lay some tracks down and then bring it into the studio, or how do you present it to the band?
Different. Usually I'll take the acoustic guitar and I'll just hit the voice memo on the recorder on my phone.
Right.
And I'll just record something just to scratch. And then I'll listen to it. If I kind of get a little weird with the tempo, or, you know, sometimes I'll put it into Logic and then I'll record it with a click track
and then
do the vocal. So I've done it both ways, but 9 times out of 10, it really just comes from, you know, my phone.
Yeah.
I'll just pick it up. I got there at about 11 o'clock and they were waiting on me to get there. They already had it charted. Everybody had their chart. They had never sat down and played it. You know, all they had was a bunch of numbers, a Nashville number system on a sheet of paper. And I talked briefly to them, just kind of, this is kind of what I'm looking for. You know, I want it to sound kind of like this. And then I played them a little reference from my phone, and they all go into their separate rooms. I can hear them all working individually on their own, kind of what they're feeling just from listening to it just once. And then at 1, 2, 3, and then they kind of start running through it and they hear them start playing. They did one run and then they came back through and they started talking about it. And then they did another pass. And the next thing you know, 30 minutes later, they're through. They have completed the song, and it's just incredible to watch them work. I don't understand it.
You decided after 25 years, you grew up in Alabama, right? Now, where are you from?
I did. Originally? Yeah.
Okay. And you said, oh, hey, I've been a teacher for 20, I assume you went and got a degree. You obviously have a teaching certificate and all that stuff. And what grade did you teach? What would you normally do?
I taught for the majority of my career, I taught seventh grade science.
So it's middle school. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Middle schoolers is where I spent the majority of my time teaching.
And you were in a state where people respect their teachers most likely.
For the most part, yes.
You always have those outliers. But so after that, you said, okay, I'm going to, this is it, honey. We got to go to Nashville. I have the urge. And how many years ago has that been?
That was that was last year. So it was last.
Oh, wow.
2022 is when we finally made the move. I mean, you know, for 25 years, well, to back up, you know, I played a lot before I started teaching.
Oh, sure. You had to be playing or you wouldn't be as good as you are. Absolutely. Yeah.
But I did put it down for probably, I don't know, maybe 10 years or so. I wasn't playing at all. I'd pick up the guitar every now and then. I'd do, you know, something. I had a small demo recording studio. I take it around with for a couple of years. And then in 2009, I think 2009, 2010, somewhere in there, I had a friend of mine suggest I start playing some open mics. He had heard me sing. He's like, dude, you got to do something with this. So I did. And then next thing I know, you know, I'm playing solo shows and picking up residencies wherever I would go. They'd ask me, hey, look, can you come back and play every week?
Now, what state were you in? Had you already moved?
This was still in Alabama.
Oh, okay. So still in Alabama. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, and that went from playing, you know, shows around town in the Birmingham, Alabama area to I started picking up private event shows all over the country. And
now, did you have your own band? You have your own band, or were you doing solo stuff?
I did. I had, but it didn't start that way. You know, I did play in a band. I was the front guy for a band, but that lasted for about 6 months or so. Mm-hmm. And I realized that it's just easy for me just to strap up a guitar on my shoulders and, you know, show up at a gig and play. It was a whole lot easier.
Right.
But, I was still writing a little bit, you know, not a ton at the time. This was, you know, like I said, this was in 2009, 2010. And then from there, you know, I started playing. I was picking up quite a bit of shows and still teaching and coaching, by the way. I was coaching football and wrestling, mostly wrestling. I did that for most of my career. And what was happening was I would be coaching and, you know, we'd be waiting for parents to show up. It'd be 5:30 to come pick up their kids. And I've got to be across town to play a show, you know, by 6:30, 7 o'clock. And, we started running into issues with that. And finally I went to the principal, you know, I said, look, I'm going to have to stop coaching after this season.
Yeah,
and they did. He let me do it. And then the funny thing was the following school year, they had hired someone for that position. And then, you know, at the last second, he decided he didn't want to do it. Principal came back to him and said, look, I don't care what you have to do. You can just be a sponsor. You can have a coach come out there and run it and you just be there.
Yeah.
I can't do that. So I ended up coaching an extra year. But anyway, so, you know, that happened for a long time. I was playing shows while teaching, while coaching, you know, family. I got 5 kids and have several dogs. And, you know, we had life was just crazy.
Yeah.
But I worked the people that I worked with at the time while I was a teacher. I'll say this. They were so supportive of me. They knew that, you know, I had a second career outside of teaching, and not a single time did I ever have an issue with a teacher or an administrator that I worked with go, you got to quit this and focus just on teaching, because I love teaching. You know, that was my passion. Well,
obviously
too,
you did that many years. Sure you did.
Yeah.
But what I'm sure they saw was the love you had for music, but also the talent you had. You know, I mean, you had talent in both areas, but it's like, okay, we're holding you back.
Well, in a strange kind of way, that's kind of how it played out a little bit. I was playing a solo show in Birmingham, and I played in Nashville every now and then, because there's so many places to play, you know, private sure. events, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
But I hadn't played on Lower Broadway. I remember going when I was younger to Lower Broadway. I don't know if you've been down that stretch before.
No, I've heard you talk. Yeah, I've heard about it. Yeah.
It's incredible. I mean, from 10 o'clock in the morning till 2 o'clock a.m., there are bands out there playing and rocking it in all these different bars and venues. And when I was younger, I'd made a trip up there, and I remember it was with a friend of mine. He was a co-writer at the time. And I just remember thinking, man, if I ever get to play here, I feel like I've accomplished something. Mm-hmm. And so fast forward to 2020, I think 20, maybe 21, no, 2020. It was right around COVID. I was playing a show in Birmingham, and at this show, I was doing just all my original stuff. And this guy comes up to me afterwards, and it was an introduction to a friend of mine, Chuck Rackley, and introduces himself, said, "Hey, look, I book the shows in Nashville at the Tin Roof. And I'd love to have you come play there." Well, I was just elated. You know, I was just thinking, you know, I get to go play a writer's round in Nashville. I'm cool with that. You know, I was excited.
Sure.
I get a call the next day or the following Monday. I'm at work. I get a call. I'm in the classroom. I recognize his number because I'd saved it. So I walked outside the classroom, answered the phone call, and it goes, "Hey, this is Brad. Said, listen, I want you to know that, you know, I really enjoyed it, and I want to give you your own residency downtown Nashville once a week." And I was like, "What do you mean?" He said, your own show. You play your own show for 3.5 hours, and I'm give it to you every week." But it was on a Tuesday.
Yeah.
And as you know,
yeah.
Is it on a Tuesday? You know, I'm supposed to be, you know, in the classroom Monday through Friday teaching kids. And if I go up there every Tuesday at 11 o'clock, that means I'm going to have to leave early in the morning. I'm going to definitely miss school.
Yeah.
I went and told a coworker, and she was like, you need to do it. You need to do it. I was closing in on, you know, in Alabama, you can retire after 25 years.
Is there tenure in Alabama? Is there tenure?
There is.
Okay.
There is. And I was closing in on year 25, and it was just right around the corner, another year. And I think everybody at that point knew I was probably going to retire and do something with music. So I went to principal's office and told him, and, you know, I've got this opportunity. You know, he could have said no. He could have said, "No, you have to teach." But at the time, I mean, he, like you said a minute ago, I mean, he was extremely supportive and said, "You know, you make sure your class is taken care of." He said, "Go do it." And so I did. And I did it for a while. And it was that residency led to another one and then another one. And then, you know, I've got right up to the time for me to officially retire in 2022. And that's when we decided, look, let's just move to Nashville. And let's just see what happens. Yeah. And then since then, it's been absolutely crazy.
Funny thing about life is you never know when an opportunity is going to hit. You just never know. Yeah. I mean, everybody wants to hit. I wanted to hit when I was 18 or 20 or 19. It didn't. You know?
Well, you know, the weird thing is especially in country music, it seems like everything nowadays has to be built around a storyline. Like if you're going to break an artist, they have to have, you know, okay, they can sing, which most people can sing, you know,
Yeah.
But they need that element of, well, okay, good. But what's his story?
Yeah.
And I always felt like I didn't have one, Rick. I felt like, you know, I just felt like, you know, my story is really, I don't have one. I'm just a songwriter.
That's the Southern in you. That's the Southern in you right there. I ain't going to be braggadocious. I'm just a songwriter, you know.
You know, well, that's kind of, I mean, when I first moved here, that I was, we really moved here. Not, I moved here not as an artist. I moved here as a songwriter because that's what I, that's my, where my passion was.
Right.
But I had people constantly poking me like, dude, you need to be playing, you need to be doing some things. And, you know, and so I started, you know, looking around, trying to figure out where I fit in. But I remember one time I was playing at downtown Nashville, and this guy walks in, and me and Nick Williams were playing the duo. He walks in, he looks, he's standing right in front of me. He's got his arms folded like this, and he's about 10 feet away, and he's just listening. And it was one of those days where vocally I felt good. You know how that probably goes. You know, some days you're good, some days you're off, and this was a good day.
Yeah.
Anyway, he listens for an entire song, doesn't say a word. And then he comes up to me at the end of, I think probably the second song I'd done. And he said, so I was walking by, and listened to you and said, what's your goals? And, you know, hardly even introduced. I don't even remember if he told me his name.
Right.
And so I said, you know, and I don't know how to answer it. I just was like, I just enjoy playing, you know, and looking back, I should have said, I'm here for a record deal and you're going to give it to me. You know, that's what I should have done.
It wouldn't have gone that well, probably.
But turns out he was an A&R guy with BMG who was on his way to another show. And I pulled him off street, you know, because they blast the speakers out there, you know, out in Broadway.
Kind of like New Orleans where they have the jazz. Yeah. So it's the same concept, yeah.
But the weird thing happened. What happened, Rick, was he goes,
Today's podcast is supported by David Smith of Edward Jones. Are you happy with your financial strategy? Or maybe you'd like to see what other opportunities are out there. Well, give David a call at 469-372-1587. That's 469-372-1587. David is only concerned about one person, that's you and your financial health. So check him out, David Smith, Edward Jones, 469-372-1587.
After our conversation, we'd exchanged, I'd give him a card and we had talked and I could tell that he was genuinely interested. He says, well, how old are you? And immediately I thought,
oh no.
Okay, here we go. I said, at the time I was 48. And I said, I'm 48 years old. And I could see him go, his face go, just like that. And I did, within 30 seconds, he had already shook my hand and walked out the door.
Yeah.
So in the back of my mind, that was never going to be my story. Right. Because, you know, if that's how the music industry feels and up to that point, honestly, things have changed in the past couple of years, but up to that point, you know, they were looking for people with mullets and 23 years old. And I mean, that's kind of what they were looking for. And I didn't have any of those. And nobody breaks into the scene at the age at my age. That just doesn't happen.
No.
I've been doing it a while. And so I have a track record and I have some accolades, some things that I've accomplished. But, you know, as far as officially breaking out into country music radio, you know, it just doesn't happen at my age. And I was realistic about it. But what ended up happening was people started grabbing on to the actual story of, well, hey, this is actually a story. You know, I never wanted to be the poster child or carry the flag of, you know, 50 and up.
Yeah.
You know, that was never my intention to start waving around going, hey, look at me. I'm 50 and I'm, you know, but that's the story that people have gravitated towards. Like, look, now this is a story. You paid your dues as a teacher. You did, you know, you raised a family, you did this and this and this, and you decided to chase a dream that people had always wanted you to chase and told you to go do, and you just never could. But now I can, now I retired.
when the guy says, you tell him your age, and he goes, oh, crap. It didn't matter to him at that point. That's what's funny about it. He didn't care. He heard you. It shouldn't. And it's like, dude, they don't see me on the radio. As soon as he heard that, I was like, well, crap. And it's like, what difference does it make? You didn't seem to bother you when you walked in here.
Yeah.
You know, but the story is to me is it's to me, not just about that. And that's the other thing that most people I always talk to, they're driven to play. And if they could play all the time, they'd even do it without getting paid. I mean, they have to have pay, but they love it so much. And people that are not creative don't understand that.
Right. You know, it's you're absolutely right. Like it's, you know, I'm not an artist. I don't claim to be, but for a couple of years I dabbled in, you know, just, you know, I was a huge Bob Ross fan. I don't know if you were, but the artist and, you know, have painting the pretty little trees and stuff. And
happy little flowers.
And I always wanted to paint those, you know, those happy little trees. And so I did. One day I just picked up a brush, had no training at all, never done. I picked up a brush and found a canvas and just started painting just based off memory. And I remember thinking, well, nobody's ever going to appreciate this, but I love it and I'm going to keep it. And there it is. And I did a couple of those. You know, I never sold them or anything. I think I maybe gave a few away, and I never did anything with them. But it was because I put work into it, and it was art. I wouldn't make any money off of it. And so you're absolutely right. You know, artistic people, especially, and even songwriters, I can't tell you how many songs I've written that just sit in a folder. I loved it when I wrote it. And the same is true with so many songwriters I know.
Yeah.
They do all these co-writes. They go in, they write a song. Next day, they get up, drink coffee, and they write another song with someone else. And most of the time, you're talking, you know, 99% of the songs never get out because a lot of people don't have the money and finances and the publishing money behind them to put this stuff out.
Yeah.
So it is all about being creative and appreciating your own work. And I think for me, and me and my wife were talking about this the other day, and I think I had a conversation yesterday and was pretty much talking about the same thing. You know, sometimes, you know, I don't necessarily want to get the pat on the back necessarily, but I do want to be recognized for my hard work like anybody else would.
Yeah.
I mean, if you work a job, if you do a great job at what you do, you don't have to have an award for Employee of the Month or here he is. No. He did, you know, but recognition, like, hey, man,
yes,
you did a good job. And that's all most people want, I think.
Hardest thing, I think, for one of the hard, more difficult things is trying to convey what's in your head to the people in the studio.
It is impossible.
You go like, I hear horns. Well, like what? You know, horns. Come on.
I was having this exact conversation last night with my best friend, Craig. We were talking about it, and we haven't added the horns yet to the recording. Josh is going to go back and add some of that. And I think we're going to use some real horns and not just the brass on a keyboard.
Yeah. Use the real ones. Yeah.
But you know, I can hear it in my head. I hear the song exactly the way I want to do it. And so when I did it on my phone, just recording it, I sent it to Josh. I said, look, this is nothing like what I'm hearing in my head. And I tried to describe it to him, took the studio, and you know, I could tell that, you know, it wasn't completely translating. So you're right. It is impossible sometimes to do it unless you're like humming every single lick that a guitar needs to play or the horns need to play. It's hard to do.
But the other part of that is what the other people bring in that you never thought of. Going back to your music, when you were growing up, even as an adult, what was your, did you start listening to country right away?
Yeah.
What was your kind of, you know, the people you listened to when you were growing up?
I grew up listening to Alabama records. Like we had one of those. I don't know. You can't see it right now. I actually have it behind me here. But it was one of those big buffet looking stereos from the 80s
way back.
You know what I'm talking about? Had the speakers built in and you open up the top.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So we had one of those and we had a collection of
them. And it had a turntable in it.
That's it.
Yeah. Right.
And, you know, it was the kind of the centerpiece at the time. You know, this was, you know, early, late 70s, you know, early 80s. And these records that we have are old Southern Gospel records in Alabama. And I remember listening to Alabama when I was younger. We had just, it was Love in the First Degree was probably the first Alabama song that I really remember. And we had Mountain Music and all those. And I just, man, I fell in love with it. And then the older I got, I really fell in love with the sound of like good harmonies, the Eagles, Alabama. And then the older I got, it was Shenandoah and Diamond Rio and all of these great bands, country bands, Restless Heart. You know, I loved learning how to pick out the harmonies and singing. Mm-hmm. And that led to, you know, when I started my own group, when, you know, we were in high school, you know, we used to enjoy just the creative process of breaking down a song by parts and singing and stuff. And so my early influences were Alabama, the Eagles. And, you know, ironically, you know, I'm a, you know, lead singer of an Alabama Eagles tribute band now. I didn't orchestrate it that way, but it sure helped when it came time for us to figure, okay, what songs are we doing? We're like, I got you, man. Look, here they are. I'm ready to go. Y'all need to learn your stuff because I've already, you know, I know these songs.
Are you working on, I know you went to the studio yesterday. What are you working on? I mean, you're working on trying to finish an album or, I mean, what's your goal now? The local goal, so to speak.
Well, so to back up these, you know, I mentioned this earlier, but you know, I've got all these songs that I have done for the past, I don't know how many years, and I've put out albums, I've put out EPs and singles, but I also, had some that I put back like this. These are going to be singles on my new album. And I've had this album sitting waiting for almost 2 years now. Some really, really good stuff in there. But I don't want to put it out until I have the money, the resources, the marketing to put them out, because I feel like they're too good in my mind just to put out there and be done with it. And, oh, yeah. I mean, so I've been waiting on that opportunity.
You're past
for
that
now.
Point in your life, in your career. Yeah. You're past that now. Yeah. You don't. Yeah.
Yeah. So I want to make sure that it's done right. And so in the meantime, what's happening is I'm still writing. I still have ideas. And sometimes, you know, I'm sure you've done this before, you get an idea and you have to pretty much stop what you're doing wherever you are and get it down or record it or do something. And I have so many of those. And so as a result, you know, here's what's coming up. You know, I've got a video shoot. I was in the studio yesterday. I'm going back in the studio Thursday to finish the vocals on this song. I've got a video shoot for a song on Saturday and I'm with an artist that was Miss University of Alabama. It's going to be the other vocal on this, and it's a Christmas song. So we've got to get it out pretty soon. I've got to get that out, I know, relatively quick because, you know, we're right here at the holidays. But it's a great song.
What's the title? What's it called?
It's called Christmas Eve Alone, and it's about Mrs. Claus always spending Christmas Eve by herself.
It's not supposed to be funny, but it's funny when you think helping everybody else. What about your wife? Yeah, she's hanging out with the elves. That's all she does.
She spends, you know, Christmas Eve by herself every single year.
Now, is it a beat or is it a ballad?
It's a ballad.
I figured it.
It's a fun duet, and I cannot wait. But a friend of mine named Paul Kofer brought it to me, the idea, and I held on to it for a little while, kind of figuring out which direction we probably should take it. And it's going to be a really good one. That's coming out. And then we have another one called Somewhere Around 18. It is definitely more of your rock country vibe. That's going to be probably around the first of the year. And I think we're going to probably put out an EP. I've just got at some point, something's got to give. Like, I've got to either really put some muscle behind this new album and get it out there, or it's just going to sit and collect dust. And there's some really good songs on here with some great co-writers, fantastic tracks that were done in the studio. And
are you going to go out and support it? Is always the question you have.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
now, let me ask you a question about Nashville itself. the music industry, so to speak. Because I would assume that a lot of people, obviously a lot of the stations in Nashville country, do people listen to the new stuff? Is that where they get a lot of it? Or, you know, in the rock world, they all want to have playlists and all that stuff. In other words, you release a song and the radio stations say, okay, we're going to pick it up. Of course, I know it's all weird now with the program. It's all done by big companies somewhere in New York City or whatever. Is that where a lot of people get their music now? Or how do they, you think, and I'm talking just strictly the countryside of the business right there in Nashville.
It's probably not a lot different than anything else. And, you know, you have to have, I mean, you think about the major artists right now, right? You think about Lainey Wilson, for example. Mm-hmm. And, you know, TikTok was what got her out there. And then, you know, Jelly Roll is become amazing, but it's his story. You know, he's very, you can't miss Jelly Roll when you see him. You're like, oh, well, there he is. I mean, it's obvious who that is. To get on radio, you know, I think it's different. To be heard, you still have to have that big engine behind you. Independent artist can only go so far.
Yeah.
And you can buy your way into a lot of things on your own, but still that big engine is in Nashville kind of controls everything. And that's not, I hate that that's the way it is. I mean, but that's the unfortunate truth. Now you can get streams, but it's different than, you know, when I first started. Everything now is social media, it's TikTok. And that's the language of social media that I hate. It has nothing to do with talent. Like, oh, that's a great song, but what are your TikTok numbers? Well, I don't know. I mean, you want me to go do a dance? I mean, I can hang up. I can get off this podcast right now and do some weird dance to my own song and put it on TikTok. You know, but that's just the nature of the beast now. I hope that changes. It is.
And I haven't, I'm going to have to go to TikTok. I just won't do it. I'm just so paranoid about Chinese people getting into my stuff.
Yeah.
You know, and finding out it's like, you know, but that's where it is. And you get one thing blow up on TikTok and it's like, and, you know, and I guess even, so you're talking about even the country, you know, in the, mine is more blues oriented music, I guess, but you know, that's a very niche-y business right there. But I guess still people find that music on TikTok. You would think only people under 20 would be using TikTok, but apparently that's not true if they're using finding country artists.
Because the marketing company that we're going with, in fact, is like, we do not want to spend the money to get this to radio. And 10 years ago, I would have thought, are you crazy? Yeah, that's where we want to be on radio. And then they said to me, and it's made sense, Robert, when's the last time you got in your vehicle and you listened to a radio station? And I got to think, I was like, no, I don't know. The first thing you do,
I can tell you what
I
listen to, talk radio. well occasionally I put it on.
You're right. I mean, every now and then I listen to sports radio.
Yep.
But for the most part, if I'm in the vehicle or the kids in the vehicle with me or my wife, you know, you're streaming, you're Bluetoothing, and you're anytime we've gone on a trip, on a vacation, we've never listened to radio. It's always been, you know, whoever's in the back seat controlling it and they're going through a playlist or whatever.
Because first there's no commercials.
Yeah.
You know, that's the other thing. And you're also listening to stuff that you know you already hear or heard before. Right. And so the marketing company says, what are they going to promote? Through TikTok and Instagram? I mean, what's their main thing to drive it?
It's just like TikTok. Wow. For example, if you're at home, and this may not be your household, I know it is. It's been at mine for a while now, but especially kids or young people or anybody, you know, if you're sitting on the couch, you get home from work, and you've got this phone in your hand, most people nowadays are just scrolling through Facebook or scrolling through YouTube or scrolling through TikTok. That's where their focus is.
Yeah.
And even if something is on TV, watching a movie, watching a game, whatever, a lot of people have the phone in their hand just kind of scrolling through stuff. But I haven't told you this story, but
go ahead, wrap it up.
Well, this is my buddy, my best friend. He was in the, I told you we sang when we were in high school, and he was one of the guys that was with me. We graduated together. We spent, I mean, he's best friend in the whole world. He ended up going to law enforcement and had a tough time here and there. And we ended up deciding years later that, hey man, why don't you just join me on stage? But at this time I was playing, you know, solo shows. He grabbed a cajon and he started playing drums, you know, just as a duo.
Yeah.
We did that for a while, and then people started asking us to play, you know, band shows. And so I picked, you know, a few people.
He'd bring the cajon and then you'd play the guitar.
Yeah. And okay. We had a whole band, and he was playing the cajon with a full band. And eventually, you know, like we started playing bigger shows. Like, we can't do this anymore, you know. Yeah. We're going to have to play drums. So he bought a drum set, started learning to play the drums. And the next thing you know, well, he's playing drums with me all over the place. And he came down with COVID in 2021, and ended up being hospitalized. And then eventually he was on a ventilator for almost a year.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And he came out of it, and, you know, he's good now, but I feel like, well, not good now. He's, I mean, we talk every day, but he's, you know, he can't get around much. No, his lungs function at like 40%. He can't he can't hardly get out at all. And, you know, just to walk or stand up is a success now. Whereas he was in great shape, you know, he's a drummer, you know, these guys can go forever.
Oh yeah.
But I sit here and think, you know, he can't play with me anymore. And, you know, I've had some successes and some things happen, and he would be right there with me, you know, right in the middle of it. You know, I feel like I'm doing a disservice to people like him that, you know, it wasn't necessarily his dream, but he was with me all along.
Yeah.
And I feel like if I don't make the effort to do things while I can, then I'm doing him a disservice. And so I was fortunate enough this past weekend. I'll wrap it up with saying this. I got to see my daughter in a pageant.
Cool.
She's 17.
Okay.
I got to see my son perform in a play, and my daughter, both they were in a school play. And I had a release party on this past Friday for Redneck Magic. And my son showed up for that. I also got to see my other boy when I went to go see Vivi and Eli perform. You know, I got to see him. He's in college now. And, you know, one son came to my release party, and I had another one, number 5, came with me a couple nights ago at the Josie Music Awards. I was nominated for Entertainer of the Year.
Cool.
Country Artist of the Year and Country Vocalist of the Year. And, you know, he got to go with me with that, you know, my wife. So, you know, for now, I'm thankful that they're, you know, they could easily go, you know what, you know, you've spent a lot of time doing music, and I probably could have been spent a little bit more doing this here and there, but the fact that they still support me and still do that means the world.
You're supporting each other. That's really what it's all about. So that's supersedes anything that we do, right?
Yeah,
that's true. We do it because we love music, but we also do it for people like them. And you're just as proud as them as I'm sure as they are proud of you.
I hope that's the case.
And I'm sure that's the case. And when you get your whatever award you get in the future, they'll be right there with you going, that's my dad up there. I don't like his music, but that's my dad.
I know that's the case. Well, thank you so much, Rick. It was
my pleasure. It's a great meeting.
Really enjoyed the interview, and I will keep in touch.
All right. You take care. Have a good day. See ya.
All right. You too.
Bye bye. Well, that's it for today's show. Thanks so much to Mr. Robert Abernathy for stopping by and talking to me. We appreciate it very much. For more information about Robert, you can go to his website, find all the appropriate links you need to find. It's robertabernathymusic.com, robertabernathymusic.com. And a very big shout out to our continued support from David Smith of Everett Jones. Thank you, Mr. Smith. We like what you do, and thank you so much. For more information about The Trout Show, you can always find all our links and appropriate information at thetroutshow.com. So until next time, remember, people, it's only rock and roll. But don't we love it? See ya.
Call it supernatural fate. I felt her body melt into mine. I knew my spell was working just fine. Then I whispered, girl, it's time for redneck magic. Let's go for a ride. Hop on board my John Deere Classic to the countryside. You don't need them high heels shoes.
You don't need them high heels.
What this boy's got planned for.